Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen with you, and you are officially on the couch, as you always are here. Tuesday afternoons, Pacific Standard Time, 12 noon. And as usual, I have a fabulous show for you today with an amazing guest who will inspire you, teach you a lot, and you'll want to pick up his book as well. And so stay tuned, because this is a great show today. Without further ado, I'm going to jump into it so we can get into this interview as soon as possible so you can start learning. We'll all start learning from this gentleman. He is Gabriel Cousins, MD, Dr. Gabriel Cousins. He's a world-renowned holistic physician, rabbi, yogi, spiritual mystic, psychiatrist, family therapist, vital at any age advocate, humanitarian, and peace ambassador. Quite a mouthful, huh? And those are just some of the things he's done in his life. And he's taken many other paths and has given devoted service to the divine, as he says, as well as his fellow man and woman along the way, earning the title Physician of the Soul. Isn't that the best? I love it. He's packed 10 lives and world-class achievements into just one. And we'll hear from him in just a bit. But he says this has all been part of an ongoing spiritual evolution that undoubtedly will continue at least as long as I am in my body, and maybe and beyond. And I say definitely beyond. So today we're talking about his latest book, Into the Nothing, a Spiritual Autobiography. Welcome so much, Dr. Cousins, for being with us today on the couch. It's great to have you.
Well, I'm very pleased to be here. And what I like to do is to start with a little prayer, merging the heavens and earth and heart and mind into heart wisdom, which is really what your show is about.
Aren't you the best? I love that. Let's do it.
Here we go.
Okay.
L'shem yikud k'dusha b'rihu u'shinate b'il er ilayah sh'miki v'vavki b'yidash l'shem k'zreel k'olam. Amen.
Amen.
So feel that merging for a second. Okay, great. It is what we need, is reconnecting the heart and mind, because that disconnection causes all kinds of difficulties.
Yes. It also causes coherence when we have that heart-brain coherence, exactly, yes. Which you have found as well, which yes. We can talk about. That's beautifully said. What was the prayer you just said? So you joined us all.
It's a Hebrew prayer, and it's kind of how you part of how you start the day. It's kind of an integration to, you know, connecting with your soul, mm-hmm. which is a big deal today. And part of the great difficulty today is people are feeling more and more disconnected from their souls.
Yes.
And then it's merging your heart and mind, which is another level of disconnection. So we come back into unity, heavens and earth, coming back into unity.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for that. Yeah. Kind of aligned, and we're all electronically connected as well, virtually connected. So I just, you know, thought I'd ask. Of course, we all write our autobiographies to share with our life journey with others. But why did you call it Into the Nothing? What is that about?
Well, it's really my experience.
Uh-huh.
So there's a place, as we meditate deeply and over time, where we go beyond the mind. Okay?
Right.
But there's still an I there. We go from I am and then to I-ness. Into the nothing is the merging in the primordial chaos or oneness of God, in which even that I-ness disappears.
Uh-huh.
And there's only that. There's only God.
Oh, I love it.
And that's what Into Nothing is about. It's like, that's it. Even my individual separation dissolves.
Yes, exactly. You become one with all, perhaps?
Yes, but there's no you becoming one with
right,
all.
Right, right. You are that.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, I love it.
You get it entirely. But that is what the book's about. It's just an, a kind of a, the evolution of that whole awareness.
Yes, exactly. That's beautiful. So in your book, which I just really right away, it kind of grabbed me and I went, all right, here we go. You said that you live in the world between nothing and something. So is that talking about when scientists, it's all science, of course, but it's spiritual science, say we're dipping in and out of the field continuously. But
it is. What you just said is right, because there's an oscillation going on.
Yeah.
Of nothing, then creation, and then nothing, and then creation. So you're going back and forth. Now, in the very beginning of the Torah, it says Bereshit bara. What does that mean? Something from nothing.
Yes.
So the very first line describes this.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's beautiful.
And that's the key. So it is a real process. It is what the scientists do. The sophisticated scientists are talking about. It's the alteration of existence to non-existence, non-existence to existence, going back and forth. So fast, we can barely even note that it's happening.
Right, right. When do we dip into that?
Well, I mean, it's happening all the time. When do we become aware of it?
Yes.
I think is what you're saying.
Yes.
It just happens spontaneously, but after years of work. I never had that as a goal.
Right.
That's just something that began to happen spontaneously.
Uh-huh.
And that's key. I don't had never had any goals.
Yes.
If so that you makes were sense.
Sure it does. You were on your journey learning, and these things just start happening.
That's right.
As you open up your consciousness.
That's right.
I guess. Okay.
That's exactly right.
You also talk about your book being a holistic liberation as a way of life. So what is that about? What does that mean?
Well, that's a bigger question. And the key is it's a total lifestyle. So for me, what I describe is the six foundations and sevenfold peace. And I'll quickly run through it and it will make a lot of sense.
Nice. Okay.
So the first is eating in a way that you become a superconductor of the divine. Now, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Well, it's 100% plant-based and at least 80% live food diet. Now, in my earlier books, I talk about when we eat that way, we become a superconductor of the divine. Now, in specific, I'm talking about Kundalini in the Eastern tradition and the Ruach HaKodesh in the Western tradition, is that we have these what we'll call nadis or channels within ourselves, subtle channels, subtle nervous system. And meat, fish, chicken, and dairy clog those channels.
Mm-hmm.
So when we eat that way, then the flow of energy is greatly enhanced.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's part one. The second part is a 7-day juice fast twice a year because there's always toxic buildup. Just I don't care. Clean your life. It's going to. Second foundation is what I call yoga asana, different yogas. It doesn't matter, but movement and pranayama, breathing.
Right.
Okay. And then what I enjoy the most, sacred dance. Mm-hmm. I love dancing ecstatically. I love to do it.
Oh, so that's wonderful.
That's what I really. I almost should start the show with me dancing. But
I'd love that.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. I have all kinds
that's
of
a good ideas.
Idea. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So it's a good idea. But okay. And then the third is service and charity. There's a place where we're giving back. So I have programs in 42 different countries. Mostly diabetes prevention and organic veganic farming, and then whatever else is needed.
Yes. Like
in some places in Africa, we're the wells because people have clean water.
You
have to do the basics with that.
Yes.
And then the fourth, if people are ready, working with a spiritual teacher, because there is a role. We don't know it all, and the spiritual teacher makes that easy. The fifth is as much meditation as possible. And the sixth is as much what we call Shakti power, or the energy that helps awaken the Kundalini.
Oh, yeah.
And in the biblical tradition, it's called Haniha. Same principle. It's actually in all the traditions. You see, in the Taoist, and it's in one way or another, it's there. Okay, so that's the six foundations as a way of life. Now, the sevenfold peace is similar, like peace with the body, which we just said, peace with the mind, but also includes peace with the family, which includes sacred relationship as a spiritual path.
Yes, yes.
So that's a whole other level. And in my book, Into Nothing, I go into significant depth about the role of sacred relationship as a path to liberation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And is that sacred relationship with yourself, or are you talking about yourself and others who you bring into love?
A self and another.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that would be a romantic or...
It doesn't have to be. It really is a relationship in which the commitment is to awaken spiritually. Sometimes even romantic can get in the way, but...
But it
includes it, but it's not only that.
Yes.
It doesn't require a sexual interaction necessarily. I call it sacred marriage, where people come together to elevate each other spiritually.
Right. And that's so important. Just thought I'd throw this in because, you know, as a psychologist and you as a psychiatrist working in the field as you did, a lot of people are not in the same vibrational state. A lot of people, you know, come together from a romantic sexual relationship kind of thing. But what I find, and it's probably you did, is that they're just not so spiritually connected. And that can really sort of tear you apart. If you guys, you know.
After the first year or two,
the
sexual relationship only goes so far.
Right.
You need emotional, you need mental, and you need spiritual connections for a fully healthy relationship.
Right.
So and evolving relationship.
Right. And it's evolving together is so important, as you said. Yes, that's the key. And so in your book, you know, I know you share something about having to divorce and kind of moving on because that spiritual connection or that oneness was just kind of falling apart. So.
That's right, because the initial contract wasn't about spiritual. It was more political, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, now it's like honestly acknowledging that.
Yes. Today, by the way, my special guest, as you can see him, is Dr. Gabriel Cousins. We're talking about his latest book, See If I Can Get the Glare Off.
You did pretty well there.
That's cool. There it is, I think. There you go, folks, if you can see that. It's beautiful. Great picture, by the way.
Thank you.
Love it. It's called Into the Nothing, A Spiritual Autobiography. This is beautiful. If you want to learn a lot about awakening and how to awaken your spiritual soul, if you're on a journey, folks, this is a wonderful book for you to get. We're going to tell you how you can get a hold of it at the end of the interview as well. Of course, you can find it on Amazon, but also how you can find out more about Dr. Cousins, if I may call you that. It's all right. And his journey and how he can help you on an ongoing basis as well and follow him. So we're talking about his latest book today, and he's written many other books, by the way. So we'll chat briefly about those too, so you can get turned on to those. Those kind of will lead you into his book, as a matter of fact. So I'm so fascinated with Swami Muktananda. I've always been into, you know, his teachings and things. And you were actually a student of his. So can you share with us, I think you said you were 33 years of age when you sort of began your life of spirituality with him. Can you talk about that?
Well, when I say begin life, he gave me Shakti Pot. okay, which is the transmission of the spiritual energy that can awaken the Kundalini. And yes. I don't know why, but he did it not just with touch, but actually blowing into my mouth.
Yeah.
So the whole, his whole prana went into me.
Yes.
So it was like a little bit of an extra type thing.
Yeah.
And it was that point that I went into the nothing, my first experience of that. And then coming out of that, then I got another message. You should learn to eat and live in a way that supports the Kundalini.
Yes.
So that's how I got into spiritual nutrition, just listening to that way. So yes. I basically lived in his ashram, traveling or in Ganeshberry and different places for 7 years.
Wow.
The last 7 years of his life.
Wow. My goodness.
And then I was fortunate enough to have his blessing and acknowledgement like a day or two before he left his body. Now, we didn't know he was going to leave his body, but I had completed and I was saying goodbye. My goodness, what a gift.
Oh, that is a gift.
So the last 7 years of his life, or 7 years of my cycle, 33 to 40, were very, very important. Astrologically, it actually was a guru cycle.
Oh, that's amazing. So,
no accidents happening here.
Oh, exactly.
And he was truly a very, part of the liberation is he was very wild.
In
a lot of directions. And one of the things we talk about is that with liberation, you're free to move in any direction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you never knew what he was going to do. Okay.
Okay.
That's what I mean. It was not like, here's a pattern.
Right.
Really free to move in whatever direction. And that was part of the teaching, was being in his presence beyond his verbal teaching.
Yes. His energetic presence and watching the flow and going with it, I guess, is what he's saying.
And that's be affected by it in all the different ways.
Yes. Beautiful. So 7 years living it with and around him. That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, literally, I was also teaching meditation. And when he was in LA for about a year, I would, be teaching an hour or two away. And I always get back for the evening program because I wanted to be always in his presence.
Mm-hmm.
So being in the presence does make a difference.
Yes.
In that way.
Absolutely. The energetic presence of someone like that is amazing. Yeah. A lot of viewers may not know or understand what Dharma means. So you became inspired to discover your own Dharma. So what is that about?
So there's several levels of Dharma. The first Dharma, to become liberated, to know God. That's a general Dharma for everybody.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The next Dharma is what we call right livelihood. The way you live helps you grow spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, as a holistic physician, holistic psychiatrist, that was part of my Dharma.
Right.
Another thing is the humanitarian work.
Yes.
So they all are a way of living that brings you into a certain amount of life experiences that help you grow. And,
yes.
and one of the things in my book is the world is the guru. The world, so all life experiences, if we interpret it right, can be used as a way to awaken spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
So taking all of our life experiences, seeing them as a spiritual gift to wake up, to further wake up, is what I'm talking about with that.
Okay. These are messages from the universe, I guess. We have to sort of put the pieces together like a puzzle and sort of understand how things fit together in order to become the individuals we are, I guess, in this moment.
That's right. That's right. It's a commitment to align your ego well with the divine will. And otherwise you can be, ego is running consciousness. And part of it is flipping it. So consciousness is guiding ego.
Yes. Okay.
Because ego is not necessarily bad.
Right.
If it's used in the service of waking up.
Yes, exactly. Ego is our self-identity. Is that how you are describing it?
Well, we're all given a body, we're all given a mind, we're given certain qualities. I call that ego. In the Eastern, it's called ahamkara. It's the boundary between us and the nothing.
Yes, okay. Yes.
But we don't identify with it.
Okay.
It's like you're driving a car. You never identify with your car, but that is how you're getting around.
Right.
Especially
right.
If you're in LA, right? You need a
yes.
car. But
yes.
You aren't your car. You aren't your
right.
car. Most people identify with their ego, and
yes.
then it throws everything off.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to nurture it. We want to keep our body healthy. We want our mind clear. That's taking care of the ego, but it's not who we are.
Right, exactly. And it's not the Freudian ego, by the way, folks.
No. It's just all your functions, your physical, yes. emotional, mental functions.
Yes.
And abilities, what you've been given to
yes,
grow
exactly.
spiritually in this world.
Right. So what was it with you, Dr. Cousins, that made you want to find this journey and open up and learn so much about the soul and who we are?
Yeah. In my book, there's a lot of poems in the book.
Yes. They're so, lovely. They're lovely.
And because I think spiritual life is best described through poetry. In a way. So what was in me is I call the divine urge. I didn't sit and try to create the divine urge. I had it since I was 4 years old.
Yes, yes.
And then as things evolved, I began having visions at 8 years old. And it just continued. So it was already an activated thing. So
mm-hmm.
we have Freud talking about the sex urge and death urge, right?
Mm-hmm.
The divine urge is deeper than that.
Yes.
It's the primal urge
yes.
to know who we are and to wake up spiritually. It's primal. But, and a lot of people, it's not activated.
Yes. Yeah.
And so for me, it was activated. But everybody has it. Everybody
right.
has a divine urge. And then for some people, it's more activated. And that's what really was guiding me. It's
yeah.
not like I thought, oh, I think I should be spiritual. No,
right.
There's never a thought yeah. like that.
Yes.
It was an urge to know God.
Do you think that comes from perhaps different lifetimes and, where we reach that level of learning and we have to come back in to a higher plane? And I don't want to put any values on it or anything, but, a higher plane of understanding to where we have that within us. As you did when you were little, to finally explore
right.
that.
Mm-hmm. I think using the understanding of reincarnation is we're put here on the planet to evolve spiritually,
mm-hmm.
and we're given many lifetimes to help that progression happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that is how I see it. That's very traditional. I'm going to say we think Indian, but it's also very traditional biblical.
Yes.
They just don't emphasize it, but it's there, both in the Old and New Testament, the meaning of incarnation as part of the spiritual evolution.
Yes, exactly. Beautifully said. By the way, guys, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with me, Dr. Michelle Cohen, and my special guest, Dr. Gabriel Cousins. He's written an amazing book. All right, it's an autobiography, and there it is. Uh-huh. Into the Nothing, a Spiritual Autobiography. It's about his journey into the spirituality of who he is, who we are, into nothing and back.
Yes.
And the things he discovered with many masters on his journey. And the way that we become, a spiritual warrior like he has become. So do you think we continue, incarnating until we reach a certain level to where we don't need to learn anymore? Or what's your take on that?
That's the answer. Okay. But there's traditionally, it's talked about in the more in the Indian tradition, is that they talk about sadhus and their initiation. They're walking down the river. And then they have a choice to continue walking down the river or turn back and help humanity.
Ah, I see.
And that's called
that.
The bodhisattva, the uh-huh. person who turns back.
Yes.
In the, so there's a choice there. In the Western tradition, we're seen more collectively. Let's say in the Torah. So it's just the idea is that we all eventually evolve at once. So everyone's supposed to help everyone else. So there's there's more collective awareness in the Torah tradition that it's just we're all going to ascend together, so to speak. So there's some slight differences, but ultimately we're all here to help you.
Just about what Shaktipat means, you know, and that you said that's beyond understanding.
I'll try to help.
Okay.
You're asking really good questions, okay?
Okay.
So it's the transmission of spiritual energy that has the potential to awaken the Kundalini, or in the Western, the Ruach HaKodesh, spiritual energy, if we are ready.
Yes.
And it can be like with Muktananda, it was by breath, it's by look. That's how I'm doing it now.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
By touch, mm-hmm. by sound. And so I'm doing it on a regular basis over the internet.
Yes.
Which is very interesting to me. I didn't expect that to happen.
Yes, yes.
So it's the transmission, you know, it's the transmission of the spiritual energy from someone who's reached a certain level where that energy is so activated, it can awaken that in other people.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted to have you on the show today. It was very selfish, you know.
Well, just keep looking and it's going to happen.
That's right. And by the way, when the show's over live here, we'll let you know, in our social media, how you can check it out. Again, on our LA Talk Radio Facebook page. And of course, in reruns, it's everywhere. And also on my webpage here on LA Talk Radio, as it's airing simultaneously on Channel 1 right now on the radio. Yes.
There's a little bit more to it. So a lot of people get Shaktipat from my books.
Good.
And in this book, I have what I call Shaktipat pictures, literally. And when you open it, you'll see it. Okay.
Okay.
Those are pictures that have most frequently, I've gotten feedback from people over the years that have awakened that energy.
Yes.
So now I want you to know it's also very much in the Western tradition. It says Moses looked at Yehoshua. Deuteronomy 34:9, and the spirit was in him.
Yes.
So it's I'm going to say it's a universal principle, but Western tradition, it's very clearly written there.
And very nice.
So
yes.
Everyone has the spiritual energy, and that's the traditional way of awakening it is from a spiritual master. That energy coming into you to awaken it. That's really the safest, best way to do it.
Yes, beautifully said. A common question that I get from viewers and listeners and also patients is how can they deal with the concept of death? I mean, they haven't, you know, their churches or synagogues or whatever places of worship haven't really made clear to them or convinced them that there is something in the afterlife. Now, when you were, I believe, 16, your brother passed away from a car accident. He was 22.
Yeah.
You were always searching for sort of the answer to that. How did you come to understand the reality that he was still there with you?
Well, that's a great question. Actually, when I was one, I had TB.
Oh, my gosh.
So in 1943, there was no cure.
Right.
And it was like a death sentence, but my mother had a different idea. So she just gave me lots of love and attention, and obviously I survived.
Yeah.
So I already was confronted with death at 1 year old.
Yes.
And then my brother's death at 16, my father at 21, my mother at 33. It's like, what is this?
Yes.
Okay. So I was always asking that.
Yes.
When I received Shaktipat and went into the nothing,
yes,
I came back down and the message was, there is no death for the self. The soul is immortal. It can't be born and it can't die.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer is that our souls are immortal, and so there really is no death.
Yes.
Yes, is there a death of the physical body? Yes, but it doesn't matter because your soul is continuing the journey and will just take another body. So that's the key. There's no death for the self.
Mm-hmm. You talk about in between lives in your book as well, you know, the space in between. And, you know, a lot of people who I've interviewed and learned from, they talk about that inner kind of space in between, that that is a place of learning. Is there a heaven or a hell, do you believe in?
Well, in the Kabbalistic tradition, there's seven hells and seven heavens. Do I believe it? I don't know. I do communicate. You know, my brother communicates to me from the very beginning.
Yes.
And yes. Occasionally materializes. And in my book, I talk about several places where people literally materialize. One was with Sai Baba of Shirdi, who left his body in 1918. Now, he materialized in front of other people.
Yes, he did.
He gave me Shaktipat. Okay.
Yeah.
Lakshmi, the divine goddess, the consort of Rama, materialized and merged with me and transferred, literally transferred her feminine energy into me.
Beautiful.
Literally, literally. Okay.
Oh,
I won't go into the details, but okay. Yeah. Beyond anything sexual, it's way different.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And then I talk about Abraham appearing when I was doing a 3-day, 72-hour retreat in Israel without food and water.
Oh.
He appeared, materialized, and transferred his energy of walk before God and be a blessing, and also the spiritual warrior and his divine love. Oh. It was a direct transmission of his beingness into me.
Yes.
So where are they coming from? These are people that left their body. How do they show up?
Well, right.
So, yes, we have, as far as I'm concerned, that we have astral plane realities, and those energies can actually materialize.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of stories. Sure. In my life, those are the main stories.
Right, right.
It's not unique.
Right.
So, it's not unique. So what do we say? Is there a heaven and earth? I don't know. I know there's an astral plane, and I know these energies can materialize and actually affect us. That's
Okay.
Direct experience.
Oh yeah, that's beautiful. How wonderful. I've always believed, as you know, from my teachings as well, that, you know, depending on the, I don't even know the words to say, but the frequency that we're at when we choose to leave our, you know, leave in our bodies, you know, the frequency that we're vibrating at, or the consciousness that we have, you know, we go to one of those seven possibly, elevations.
The traditional teaching is the last thought you have before leaving your body is where you go.
Oh, dear.
and that's why we spend so much time focusing on God or repeating the name of God.
Yes, yes.
So when it's time to leave your body, okay, that's where you are. You know, so I'll repeat the name of God as I explain the tetragrammaton. When I'm going to bed, when I'm waking up.
Oh, that's
as
beautiful.
As much as possible, because at the time of transition, you want that name of God as grace where you go. So that's the traditional teachings, I'm going to say, both Eastern and Western.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And you've received so many messages. And of course, the reason why you had, you know, these visitations and these entities had, you know, filled you up in your soul as well, it's because you were open and ready for it. You were on that frequency.
Yes. I wasn't asking.
Okay.
All of it was spontaneous. I never asked for anybody to show up. Generally not a good idea. You don't know who's going to show up. But spontaneously, I saw it and I recognized it. Yes.
Speaking about the fact that you never know who's going to show up, I loved the chapter where you were talking about your work with Swami Muktananda, and that there really are such things as evil spirits. And you went out and had to sort of face these beings, whatever they are. I just was saying, oh no, don't tell me there's evil spirits. I mean, I think there's energy from others who, whether they're materially on this plane or not, that can take us over when we are in a consciousness of a, I don't know how to say it again, I don't know the language, but a lower frequency.
Yeah.
Is that right? Or who were these evil spirits?
Well, both are right.
Yeah, okay.
Because you have entities, which is what you're talking about, but you have actually demons. It's part of the play. And actually, in the subtle Kabbalistic creation, we have them being created at the very end of the very end of the sixth day. But in my case, my five-year-old daughter was getting very upset. We didn't know what was going on. He says, well, there's a demon in the field and it's disturbing her. And then he tells me, you go out and deal with it. I'm like, what? Me? What? But he showed me how, certain mantras, certain things. And so then I went out and faced it and banished it. So it was a separate energetic, different than entities, which are often from people who have left their bodies and so forth and so on. And so they're two separate things. So from that, I actually learned how to do a lot more of that work. I don't, you know, that's more shamanistic work, but very real. And what I also describe is releasing the lost souls, like going into the concentration camps.
Yes.
Creating a vortex of light.
Yes.
Where the lost souls can be activated and returned to God, so they're not blocked in their way. And I also did it with Native American at what we call Blood Island, where there's a massacre.
Right.
We created a vortex of light where the souls who have been killed could ascend back into the heavens. Because that cycle was blocked.
Right, right.
So all that's going on. That's why I'm saying there's kind of multiple worlds of consciousness. And I describe this as walkers between the worlds. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the physical world, astral plane world, which is what we're talking about, but also a kind of mental and spiritual worlds.
That's beautiful. So, no, that's lovely about, you know, helping free the souls. Because as you said, I mean, if we, that's why we focus on the last word of God when we're about ready to
leave our body.
Right. Because that can, you know, get us closer. But some of the things I've heard in working in hospitals and being near one's bedside, and the anger sometimes, they're not, they're fighting, they're not letting go and releasing and allowing themselves to wherever they're going to go in a peaceful manner. And so that is what you're saying, perhaps, is causing a lot of the energy to not be released, and they're still sort of clinging to this.
Now, I described with my mother, who was, I helped her make that transition. She died of cancer. She lived in Doheny Drive.
Oh, yeah.
In LA. Okay. So I would go down there, and so the day she was, I knew the night before because I was sleeping in the next room, but she appeared to me in fear and asked for help.
Yeah.
I was very close with my mother. Mm. And so the next day I worked with her, and then I gave her a kiss, and she just kind of went into bliss.
Mm.
The second part of that is helping her soul reach the other side.
Yes.
So there's a process that helps people do it. So I took care of her as she took care of me in this life.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, there is a process, and I was just making double sure. She kind of didn't need as much help as she thought she did.
Okay.
But it's nice to have your son around to help you.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah.
And she trusted you, and you, like I said, you had a wonderful relationship with her, which is just lovely. Now, you talked about your daughter, you know, sort of showing signs of seeing something or experiencing something that wasn't comfortable. Most, as children, we're more open to experiencing, you know,
that's in my experience is the case.
Yeah.
My daughter happened to be more sensitive. I know we were in Mexico, and we're at the Mexican Museum, and she'd go in a certain area, she'd start crying. What's going on? Then, as we researched it up, what she's most upset about, it happened to be an altar where humans were being sacrificed.
My gosh.
So she was tuning into those ancient Aztec energies.
Right.
So she was very sensitive. I already knew from my experience in India, okay, what's going on?
Yes, yes.
So we are able to sort that out.
Right.
With her heightened sensitivity, again, as a child.
Yes. So what makes us lose that innocence and that awareness of being able to tune into other energies?
Just my theory is we start to join the matrix, which doesn't share that and wants us not to live that way.
Right.
But we can regain it.
Yes.
And that part too, I think, is helping people open up their awareness to these levels. Because they're always there. We can shut it or we can open it.
Sure.
So that's kind of part of the work. And even this discussion, to know that there's a possibility that this reality exists,
yes,
opens up the potential for people to say, okay, I'm going to open up here.
Yes, perfect. What are some of the small ways that we can start to open up this awareness, besides keeping others aware and sharing your wonderful autobiography and other teachings?
I think one of the key things is meditation, because it allows us to quiet the mind so we can go beyond the mind. When the mind's busy, you're stuck more in the matrix.
Yes.
And so when you quiet the mind, you're open to higher understandings.
Okay. So it's meditating. And people who are just starting out, who want to get more in touch with one or, you know, whatever, their self-discovery, you know, losing their sense of self and becoming one with all. What happens? What is the best way, rather, for them to just dip their toe in the water? Do they have to learn basic meditation for, say, 15 minutes in the morning and then throughout the day when they can participate? How can they learn to do this?
Yeah, I think the first thing is shifting one's worldview, where you see that we're put on this planet to evolve spiritually. Mm-hmm. Rather than to earn money or, you know, to exist in the matrix.
Yeah.
So our purpose is to evolve spiritually. Once you make that shift, which is a big deal, then you start with meditating and mentioned the Six Nations, a very great way to open your, connect your heart to other people.
Yeah.
Everybody's a little different. And so some people may just do it with service and charity as the opening. And you feel that communal energy. And other people are doing it commonly with meditation. Some people are just wanting to chant. So they're actually different ways.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I don't promote necessarily, you can't eat your way to God. So a good diet doesn't mean you're going to get this. But what I do find is about 95% of the people, we did a little study, who really go to this diet, start to open up to higher realities because they become more sensitive.
Yes, I see. So not utilizing that diet sort of blocks our energies, you say. Yeah, and you've discovered.
I'm going to say it doesn't open us up to the higher energies as easily.
Uh-huh. So that makes a lot of sense, actually,
yeah.
You know, in your work. You know, what I tell a lot of people, and I know you'll probably agree with me, and maybe you could elaborate a little bit more on this. In order to begin also their spiritual growth, if they'd like to do so, start meditating, learn how to do that and what technique is best for you. But also try to just basically find baby steps in loving more, loving others more, and having compassion. I mean, doesn't it begin with compassion for self? And love herself, but also spreading that out and you know, learning how to do that.
Right. Everything you're saying is true. I'm a little simpler in a certain way. When you begin to experience the true self, you access what I call the non-causal peace, non-causal love, non-causal joy, and non-causal compassion. Yes. Because it's the truth of who we are.
Yes.
It's not something I'm going to learn about. It's who we are.
Yes.
So it naturally begins to unfold. So as you say about baby steps, okay, meditate 10 minutes, 15 minutes twice a day. Let it begin to slowly open up. What I advise people is start at a level you feel comfortable and then keep expanding.
Yes. Yes.
That's what I suggest. So I don't say take on all the six foundations, sevenfold peace all at once.
Yes. No.
Start with a little meditation, change your diet a little bit, and then let it grow. Small steps, you're more likely to be successful.
No, that's beautiful. I love that. And also the part, you know, about learning to love unconditionally. That's pretty difficult, isn't it?
It's not something to learn.
It's
something that happens. See, when you get into the inner self, it is normal to have unconditional love. It is normal to have, I'm going to say, non-causal love, love without a cause. It's normal to have peace without a cause. It's just who we are. It's the essence of who we are. Yes. So you don't have to try just to develop those qualities. What we want to do is just connect deeper with who our inner self. And yes. It has it all there. It has it all there. It's automatic.
Yes, yes, it is. As a psychiatrist yourself, you probably encourage people to understand sort of their backstory and their beginnings, some of the messages they received from their upbringing, and so that, you know, they can do things like that to, you know, self-improve. So what would you suggest people begin with on a psychological, psychiatric level to help with their self-understanding a little better?
So there are different levels of that. It's an important question. So as people begin meditating, a lot of these issues come up, and they can be resolved in meditation. And when the Kundalini is awakened, it actually releases technical terms, some scars that are old memories, scars, so to speak.
Yes, yes.
And they get naturally released.
Ah, yes.
And now the third level is where, okay, I've done all this, but I still have some stuff there, which most everybody does.
Yes.
and it's there's a role for psycho-spiritual support. Now, I have a course called the Zero Point.
Ah, yes.
Which helps you isolate thought forms that are blocking you. Actually, it's to get rid of all the thought forms, negative and positive, so that we're clear to connect with the divine. And it's a 3-day course.
Beautiful.
But because that's what's needed, because a lot of people, it doesn't all clear up. Then
you
do psycho-spiritual work like what you're doing. That's another option. So all that stuff, pretty much for almost everybody, is stuff that has to be cleared up outside of the Kundalini and meditating and so forth.
Well, it's about that time for us to wrap up almost. So I just wanted to thank you so much for being here and for enlightening us all. Thank you for your energy personally. This has been lovely. Also, in terms of your 3-day course and also your latest book and other fabulous books, right here. Okay. All right. How can people best find out more about you, Dr. Right. Cousins, and get your book?
The easiest way is go to drcousins.com, and that's C-O-U-S-E-N-S.
Right.
More French, because I'm part French. And then, or go to treeoflife.mn.co, and that's like the Tree of Life community. Those are the easiest ways to access all this and all the teachings.
Beautiful.
And how to get scheduled for, I teach the Zero Point twice a year. We do spiritual fasting retreats. And every month I'm doing a meditation retreat.
Oh, beautiful. And everybody, you can just go ahead.
Yeah, it's Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. Starts with Shabbat Friday night and then Saturday, Sunday. Mm. We're meditating 3 times a day. That's Shakti Pat 3 times a day. And that probably 90% of the people, 95%, will have a Kundalini awakening during this time.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So make yourself as available as possible.
Uh-huh. Yes, you are. And thank you for your work. Thank you for what you do.
And I thank you for getting it out there in the world and the good work you're doing. And
thank you.
Be blessed that it continues to expand for you.
Oh, I'm working on it. I'm open to it.
Just let the grace happen, okay?
I will do that. Thank you for that wisdom.
And also, all the listeners, may everyone be blessed that we continue to be inspired to expand in their consciousness.
Oh, thank you for that. All right, blessings to you and your journey, and good luck on your new life in Israel.
Thank you, thank you. Take care. It's all great speaking to you. You did a great interview.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cousins. All right. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening here on the couch. As I always say, do take care of yourself first. Find out more about who you are, and then you'll be great for others. And that's the way it works in the world. Thanks for joining me, everybody. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and have a beautiful week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.